Welcome to Five Things with Lynn Hirschberg. Kiki Palmer is my guest today, and as you will soon find out, Kiki Palmer is a force of nature. Not only was she a child star with her own show on Nickelodeon, but she is also a movie star, most recently winning awards for her work in last year's Nope, written and directed by Jordan Peele. She can do it all, sing, dance, act, and she's also the host of Password. Palmer has been dazzling audience for her entire life. It is a great pleasure to introduce Kiki Palmer. So the first thing is, what person in your life was particularly meaningful to you?
What person in my life? I mean, everybody in my life, I think, has been extremely meaningful. But I'll say, you know, maybe my grandmother. She was extremely meaningful in my life, especially just because she's the person I spent most of my time with when I was really, really young. And she just encouraged me and always just told me that I could be everything I wanted to be and always just championed me and encouraged me to be myself. And so I just think back on those times and I was just so happy that I was able to spend all that time with her. You know, so yeah, so maybe my grandmother, Mildred.
Were you a very theatrical child? I know you were a child star, but were you, like, from birth, were you sort of performing?
Yes, for sure. Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And my grandmother was definitely like encouraging of that. She would always like have me get out in the middle of the room and dance and perform and do all kinds of stuff. I had a lot of energy. You know, I was kind of the kid that the teacher would say, like, to my parents, like, hey, I think that maybe she needs to be on some type of medication. She's extremely hyperactive. You know, but my parents were always very encouraging. And like I said, my grandmother was too. She even used to have me say this phrase, because a lot of people didn't want to babysit me because when I was younger, because I was always needing so much like engagement. And so my grandmother used to have me say to them, I'm not bad. I'm just misunderstood. And so that was like this really funny phrase that I used to always say to people that she had me say.
Was she a performer herself, or was she just, you know, a wannabe performer maybe?
Well, you know, she never mentioned anything of performing, but she did do like little singing and stuff like that. She sang around the house and things like that, but she didn't seem that she had any hopes and dreams of being a performer per se. Uh-huh. She definitely was a creative though. She did hair and things like that. But she was pretty okay with just like, you know, like how her life was, which was, you know, she had come from Memphis and moved to Chicago and she had a bunch of kids, you know, three from a previous relationships and three more from my grandfather. And she just was kind of like old fashioned, just woman, had her own hair salon. And, you know, it was just very, very much so, I think, what's the word I'm looking like? Very empowered, I think. But never, but not necessarily like into entertainment per se.
What was the first thing you auditioned for? Do you remember?
Yeah, it was The Lion King off Broadway. Like it was like, it was like the Chicago theater.
Wow. And you were just doing a general audition or you were going to be Nala?
Yes, I was auditioning for Nala, actually.
I bet.
And I auditioned, I think about 500 kids, 400 kids. It was a big, you know, just casting call, you know, a bunch of kids coming down. And it was the first time I'd ever auditioned for anything in that way. You know, many things before then were just like regular school plays, like where I would just sing and stuff like that. But this was obviously like an actual acting like gig that obviously included music as well. And my parents were just reading in the newspapers about it and asked me if I wanted to go down an audition. You know, they talked a lot about entertainment, specifically theater. Because that's where they met. They'd met during theater and speech tournaments, and then ended up doing theater in Chicago together at this popular, iconic theater called the Black Ensemble Theater. And so they would perform out of that theater and then eventually started kind of doing regular jobs and everything like that. But it was kind of like their love language, and we loved film and television in our household. So when they'd asked me to audition, it wasn't like a jarring thing. It was kind of like, oh, I get to do the thing or audition for the thing that mom and dad always talked about.
Uh-huh. And did you get it?
I didn't get it. I was out. Yeah, I made it down to like a good number of kids, but then I was like out. And I was kind of bummed, but I really loved it. You know what I mean? I really loved it. It was like kind of doing your first softball game and not winning, but still wanting to play softball again. That was kind of what I'd liken it to. So at that point, it became a hobby I'd identified that I liked.
What place in your life has particular meaning?
Man, I would say my hometown.
Which
so
is?
Robbins, Illinois.
Robbins, Illinois. How long ago did you live there?
I grew up there. So I was born in a hospital in a you know, nearby town. The nearby town was Harvey.
Uh-huh.
And Harvey, you know, it was kind of like the only, you know, hospital, like place that had a hospital in the surrounding area, because Robbins is so small, you know, even smaller than Harvey. And so I was raised in Robbins, which is also where my mother grew up. It was pretty cool because the house that my mother grew up and was raised in was right behind our house. So it was kind of like one of those really old Midwestern towns that everybody knew everybody.
Huh.
You know, I went to church not too far down the road, you know, and it was just kind of like a very wholesome, simple upbringing.
Uh-huh.
That I really love, you know, definitely below middle class, but still very rich in spirit.
Uh-huh. And when did you move to Los Angeles?
So I moved from Robbins when I was about 8 years old, and I moved to Sauk Village, which is another Illinois suburb that's a little bit closer to Indiana.
Uh-huh.
And then I stayed there for about a year's time. And then from there, I remember I auditioned for like American Juniors, which was American Idol for kids.
Uh-huh.
And I got my golden ticket and they flew us to California and it was a whole experience. And then after that, I did another like little gig in Chicago, which was Barbershop 2.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. That's a
big
gig. That was a big gig. That was big.
Yeah. I say small because I had like four lines, but it was definitely a big opportunity for me. And in Chicago, you know, not a lot of things film there.
Right.
So it was definitely like a great experience. But to that point, the director and the producers and all those people kept complimenting my mom on me as a talent and saying that, you know, if I wanted more opportunities, that I was going to have to go to a place like California. And that's when my parents started thinking about actually moving and giving me a chance.
Wow. Did you move to like the Westlake Apartments when you went to LA?
So the popular apartments at that time that everybody was moving into all the time were the Oakwood.
Oakwood. That's right. I said Westlake, but I meant Oakwood. Sorry. That's
my
mistake.
Yeah, I know what you meant. No, I knew what you meant, but they were like the popular apartments, but I'll be honest, they were kind of like expensive.
Uh-huh.
I mean,
they are. Yeah,
they're pretty expensive. Like, you know, so we couldn't afford that, especially with, you know, all of us. It was six of us, my little brother and sister, my older sister, myself, my mom and my dad. And so we kind of like had to MacGyver like our living situations most of the time until I got some stable stuff and my parents were able to get some stable footing as well. Because, you know, my dad, he kind of like got his pension pulled out and, you know, we got money from the church. They gave us, you know, what they could give us. And then we went kind of with everything that we had and just hoped for the best. And then I kind of quickly started getting jobs and stuff like that. And, you know, we were able to start getting settled in. But we kind of bounced around mostly in the Duarte, Pasadena,
uh-huh,
Altadena area.
Wow. So you were sort of supporting your family. That must have been intense.
Yeah. I don't think I didn't initially know it, that I wasn't necessarily supporting them financially. For a long time, my dad tried to keep a job.
Uh-huh.
But what ended up happening is that no one could watch my other siblings.
Uh-huh.
So it got to the point where my parents actually couldn't have a job.
Uh-huh.
Because I worked too much. So it would be a situation where like I would be filming in Montreal or filming in, you know, Toronto or filming in Louisiana. And my family would always want to try to keep us together. So I didn't like kind of end up living this more extreme life than,
uh-huh,
my siblings. So they kind of made the decision to kind of make that the family business.
Oh, wow.
And just support me and help me. And that way, you know, my brothers and sisters could still have a mom and dad too.
All right, let's go to the inanimate object in your life. What thing? Or you can do a live dog. I'll make that exception, or a live cat. But the thing in your life that's not a human that has meaning for you, like a piece of art or a song or a stuffed animal or a tree. Can be anything.
I mean, I think in terms of inanimate objects, it would be like my journal. And I have many journals, but all of my journals, like, they mean a lot to me. I've kept most of them, all of them, from since I was about 12 years old.
Oh, wow.
So I love journals. That has like a very big sentimental value to me. But just in terms of like non-humans, definitely my cat, Jackie. I love her so, so, so much. Yeah.
What kind of cat is she?
I think, you know, I would consider her, she's probably a mixed up cat, but I think also a calico by.
Ah, so she looks like, are you talking to her?
No, I was talking to her, talking to someone else, but my cat, you know, she's apparently a calico cat, but the description of a calico cat is very specific a lot of times. And she's kind of like mostly white, but she has like a black tail. So I don't know if she's actually what anyone like. Because when I look up calico cats, I'm like, she don't really look like a calico cat. But that's what I would say she is.
And your journal, how often do you write in your journal?
So I used to write in it every single day when I was a kid.
Wow.
Like, you know, every single day. But then as time went on, I kind of just like did a more like every few weeks or then once a month or, you know, so it's kind of stretched out, you know, a little bit now. But I definitely do try to get in a writing or so a month at least.
Have you ever had the scary thing of someone you don't want reading it?
I absolutely have.
What happened?
I mean, I was devastated. It's, to me, the worst thing that ever could happen. I hate that about journals. So I've learned to kind of hide them because I actually think it's so weird for somebody to read your journal.
But very tempting to people. I had a roommate read the journal once. Very bad.
It's so ridiculous. To me, it's just like, what the hell's wrong with you? Why would you read my damn journal?
Are they like notebooks or are they actually like, do you get sort of a bound thing that you write in?
Yeah, I mean, I get not a notebook, like an actual journal. Like, it would, you know, some of them can have different, you know, some of them can have like quotes on the front or quotes on the back, or, you know, it can have like kind of like a leather. I have one that has like leather pages, you know what I mean?
Oh, wow.
One that says Virgo on the front. So I think, you know, my journal lift definitely says I'm a journal.
So no one could have read it by accident.
Absolutely not. What?
So let's talk about a time in your life that something bad happened that turned out to be something good. In other words, like a part you didn't get, so you got another part, or an audition that didn't go well but led to another audition, or a romance that didn't work out that led to another romance. You know, that thing where you think the world has come to an end and it actually opens another door.
I remember one time, like around the time that I was working on my first talk show, like in the middle of like, you know, creating the deal for my first talk show, there was this show that I was possibly going to do called The Game that, you know, was like a really cool opportunity, a really cool role that they'd kind of crafted like around me. And I was really excited about the opportunity, but I also knew in my heart that I really, really, really wanted to do a talk show. And that was something that I really wanted to start exploring in my career for more reasons than one, you know, kind of just like on an evolution of myself kind of thing. It felt like something that was really calling me. And I kind of waited to get the deal in the right position. And then eventually it just kind of like fell through and they were just like, no, we're good. We're fine. And I lost the opportunity of the television show, which would have been also helpful financially at that time for me. And I remember thinking, oh my gosh, like, damn, I made a mistake. Like, I didn't respond quick enough. And I didn't make the right choice, even though the choice of my heart was to make sure that I could do the talk show, because that was something that was really, really like, that really felt right to me. But then I was kind of just, you know, I was just sad and felt like I'd made maybe the wrong choice, or I had been a little bit too slow on what the decisions I should make and et cetera. But then in the end, I was really glad that I ended up not doing that show. I was also really glad that my talk show, even though it didn't last, the first talk show I had, it didn't last very long. I was very happy that it started my journey of being a host. And that's something that's now such a huge part of my career. Yeah, I think it just reminded me to always really, you know, no matter how crazy it may seem or how difficult it may seem, following your heart and going what your heart tells you is always the right way to go.
How did you first meet Jordan Peele?
I was doing an episode of Key and Peele. When I was 17, I did an episode of Key and Peele.
What did you play?
I played Malia Obama in like, so he used to do this series of sketches where he would do like the translator, like translator for Obama, translator for Michelle Obama, translator for Malia Obama. And I did the Malia Obama translation.
Ah. Did you ever meet Malia Obama?
I don't think I ever met Malia Obama. I think I've only met Michelle Obama, honestly.
Did she have any sense that you had played her daughter?
No, I don't think she knew that. Yeah. I don't think she knew that, actually. I wish I had brought it up.
And so then there's a big gap between that and Nope. So did you keep in touch with Jordan, or did all of a sudden you get the call out of the blue to audition for Nope?
So I just got the call that Jordan wanted to talk to me. And that was kind of, it was no audition. It was just kind of talked to me and then wanted me to do the part. So I was definitely very like, wow, at that, you know, except that happens sometimes, but it doesn't happen all the time. And it's definitely not necessarily what you would expect from an opportunity to be working with someone of Jordan Peele's stature. So I was definitely very honored that he was so clear on the fact that he wanted me to play the role.
I thought you were so great in the movie. I thought you just,
thank you.
You just popped. And I loved you in your shorts and your sneakers. And you also just looked fantastic.
Thank you. I really loved my costume as well. The costumer really allowed me a lot of space to explore with that. And she was also extremely great. And Jordan was also supportive in what our vision was for the character. And that was a great experience.
And your hair was great. I loved your hair.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
All right. So our final question, because you have to get back to your exciting and busy life, is what is a purely joyful moment in your life? Like a moment when you experience pure joy?
Man, a moment where I experience pure joy? Joy comes in so many different places. I experience a lot of joy in a lot of ways. But I think just, you know, thinking of the like simple joys of life, like being with my family, that's pure joy, pure peace for me. I love my family. They're extremely supportive. They're extremely loving. We're all very close. And they don't expect anything from me or one another. Like, they can come over my house and we don't talk. You know what I mean? They're just at the house and we're just existing in the same space. I don't have to do anything for them to love me. So,
was it difficult for you to leave home?
It was not. At the time that I left home, I was very ready to leave home because I felt like with the industry and with my career and everything, I was always just so kind of like, I felt very bogged down in a lot of ways, just very like, you know, I just always felt like trapped kind of. And I felt like my family played a part in that because my mom was also my manager. And so it was very kind of like a lot of stuff I had to work through on my own in order to come back to the realization of like, hey, you know, the industry was tough for all of us. And my parents didn't have all the right answers and they didn't know how to do everything, but they tried their best. And at the end of the day, we all survived. And so there's a lot of growing that I had to do. So at the time that I left home, I was very much so ready for that.
Was it hard to, I mean, this will be my last question, but I think you've been so graceful about kind of growing up in public. Has that been hard for you, or, you know, does that present challenges? I mean, people have watched you since you were small.
Oh, yeah, it presents tons of challenges. I appreciate you for saying that I've done it gracefully because it's definitely something I think about. And I think, you know, it can be quite tempting for any young adult person or person coming of age to lash out at that kind of pressure.
Yes.
Because it's unfair. It's an unfair pressure. So I don't blame anybody for lashing out. And I think maybe I felt the lashing inside of me internally, but I think I've always just been very kind of like, I don't know if the word is cautious, but I've always been kind of like, I guess honest about how I feel and what I'm experiencing and the fact that, hey, you know, I'm growing up, I'm not going to be perfect and I'm just going to continue to experience life the best way that I can. And I just think that maybe is how I've always dealt with it. So it's not that I'm not going through the same thing that anyone else is going through. Yes, it's under a different microscope, but I think every young person everywhere, when they go from being a teenager to being an adult, they're extremely like just judged and people want them to stay the same and nobody wants to see them grow up and nobody wants to understand that, hey, they aren't who they were as a kid. And those are just universal lessons that you learn growing up. And I think being in the public eye, I was just very careful maybe not to over-sensationalize my experience because that only would make me feel that much more separate, if that makes sense.
So you were pretty sophisticated about it while it was going on because it's, you know, hard to do that in the moment.
Yeah, I think, I don't know if I could, if I was able to articulate it as I did just now with you, but I definitely was like going through the motions of it. I was very kind of like, well, I don't want to like force anybody to see me differently. Just as much as I'm not who they think I am, I don't think that communicating in that way helps me anymore than it does being here. So I think I was kind of thinking it more like maybe more superficially, kind of surface level. But then as I look back and as we're talking about it now, I can definitely kind of dive into more of the nuances of maybe why I made some of the choices I've made or have come off the way that I have.
Thank you so much for talking to me. And I'll see you in a week or so.
Yes, I'll see you in a week or so.
Yes.
Thank you.
Take care and have a wonderful day.
All righty. You too.
Thank you to Kiki Palmer. Stay tuned for another episode of 5 Things with Lynn Hirschberg. My guest will be someone surprising. 5 Things with Lynn Hirschberg is produced by Michael Beckert. Technical assistance and engineering by Rich Cervini and Max Solomon at Hanger Studios. The coordinating producer is Caroline Wolf. I would like to thank Carlene Donovan, Lauren Auslander, Brynna Rifkin, Court Barrett, and Sarah Moonves, who makes everything possible. The theme song is by Blondin Carr. And thanks always and especially to Zora.